All right, welcome to module 4 of this Channel 9 series talking about release management with Visual Studio Team Services. And my name is David Tessar.
And I am Donovan Brown.
And then we're going to dive into environments right now and give you a lot of detail on what you need to do in this space. First up, though, we're going to tell you, you know, what is an environment? Because although it may seem obvious, there's a little bit of caveats you need to understand. Talk a little bit about agents and how it relates. Hybrid and variables in terms of defining your release definitions. And then we're going to give you a couple demos. So here we go. What is an environment? There's a reason why at the bottom here we've labeled it the way it is. Logical grouping of tasks, variables, security approvals, and agent pool. Most certainly, I think the most logical conclusion people think about is, well, an environment equals the place I'm going to deploy stuff to, right? That's how most people think about it. But if you really want to take a step back and you look at that bottom definition, an environment can be whatever you want, right?
Yes.
You could have, you know, three environments, call them whatever you'd like, that happen to all do something against one particular physical environment, right?
Exactly. And I think that's very important to point out. I have lost count of how many customers I've had to explain to them that, yes, you called the environment dev, but you can do whatever you want. You could actually spread, for example, one of the ones that actually came from a customer was, Donovan, we have to make sure that our database admin has an opportunity to look at the scripts before they're executed, but it all goes to the dev environment. I was like, well, great. Let's just create another environment, add your database admin as the approver for that environment, and just take the word environment out of your vocabulary. Stop thinking of them as every environment has to go to a physical, or what we've always said a dev environment is. If I wanted to copy my web app in one environment and have approvers before and after it, and then deploy my database in one environment as we define it here, and then have approvers before and have it, our tool will happily do that. You can target the exact same machine in multiple what we call environments in the user interface, but think of them more as stages or phases in your deployment in which you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. So if you think about it, right, you say you get one set of tasks, right? One set of variables, one set of security permissions, one set of pre-post approvals, and one set of agent pools that you're directing it to. That's, you know, that's the variables of the level of granularity within an environment. So
do whatever you like inside of them. Target the same environment multiple times, or maybe you have four different QA environments, but you want to do the exact same thing all at once. You could do them in one environment called QA that touches any number of machines. Mm-hmm. So again, I think of them more of stages or phases of my deployment versus in physical environments.
Yep. So next, agent options. This is important that you understand a number of concepts in this. The first one that's really important is the fact that the build and release agents in this new system are the same, right? It's one agent. There's a client download for, you know, the process that we showed you in the other course on how to create build agents. It's the same. Like that same agent that you install and configure can be used for releases as well. And so that's really important to understand. The next thing is, let's say you have all these different machines all in a pool, and maybe, for instance, your release machine really just needs PowerShell on it, right? Maybe that's all it really needs. It needs PowerShell or some Azure PowerShell commandlets or something like that. But yet your build machines need a whole bunch more stuff, right, to do the builds, Visual Studio and the likes. If you assign them all in one pool, how do you know, how can I make sure that I get just that one machine that's doing the deployment? And there's a number of ways. One, you could assign a new pool for just the particular released ones. That's definitely an option. And just assign, when you create that build agent, which is also your release agent, assign it to that release pool, whatever you want. But there's also another option, and this is the lower level of granularity that you have, is this concept of demands and capabilities. And those two are very much tightly coupled together. When you go into the definition of the environment, there's an option there that you have to say, hey, there's certain demands must exist for this to happen. Those demands are going to be there based on the task. So certain tasks will actually automatically add in certain demands. And you can see in the slide, Azure PowerShell is one for a task that uses Azure PowerShell. But you know, it's very flexible. So like if you said, I want to add demand for, you know, release me into the wild build agent, then, right, you could add the release me into the wild build agent and say that it must exist, okay, in the demands for that particular environment. And then you go, if you go over to the another screen, which is the one we have on here, in the agent queues, you have the ability under the capabilities tab for that particular agent to add manual things. So if you wanted, in this case, to keep continue with that example, you would add the release me into the wild agent capability. And then you would know always that that one agent, if that's the only one that has that tag, is the one that's going to actually execute whatever tasks are there for that particular environment definition.
Correct. And I do this a lot because I use tools that aren't currently on our hosted build agents, like Wix for my installers. And what I can do is I can actually add those capabilities to my private agents and then add those demands on my build. And it'll say, okay, I will only pick an agent who has the capabilities of Wix, for example. The name of the agent is actually a capability of it as well. So there's a couple ways you could do what you wanted to do. If I know the name of the agent, and I always want to use that agent, I can demand that the name be this name, and it always picks that particular agent. Another time that I did that was I'm a big fan of Selenium, and Selenium can run across different browsers, but I don't install all the browsers and all my build agents. So I actually added each browser category like Chrome or Firefox or IE as a capability of an agent. And then on my release, I demanded that you have Firefox, and it only chose the one agent that it knew had Firefox on it and ran all my Selenium tests there. So they're very flexible and very powerful way to be able to say, that's the agent that I want to use.
Yeah, and those build agents will by default, by when the agent, the service runs, you know, it actually gathers data on what are the capabilities that it has. So you do get some of that out of the box, right? You're not going to have to sit there and hide everything
Absolutely.
In there.
Absolutely.
So you can go to, you know, in that agents tab to see, you know, what services are available for what nodes and then give you those other options.
Absolutely.
Okay. So next up, this next topic is about hybrid release management. We kind of talked about it in the earlier module, but this is just to really get your head around the architecture and reiterate the point of the fact that we can do hybrid type deployments, right? So your agent is just an agent. That agent can run somewhere behind your corporate firewall. It can run wherever you want. The only requirement is that agent has the ability to securely connect up to the service, right? And the build release service, right? To being able to talk and do different jobs. So in this particular case, right, we're giving you an example here where, you know, you might use the hosted agents for some things, but you might want to release that build to a internal only environment and using our release management service. So in that case, you would have an on-premise agent or agent pool registered with our release management service, and that release management service would then deploy to your internal server farm, right? And that server farm may not have any access to the team service, right? It doesn't really matter. Even that whole environment doesn't have to have any access to the outside world if you don't want it to. It doesn't really matter as long as the agent just can communicate. So it's that agent's there sitting there looking for jobs, talking to the service saying, hey, do you have something for me? And when it does, it comes down, executes that task list that you have against whatever you're telling it to do.
Absolutely. Yep. So the question I get asked is, Donovan, can I deploy to on-prem from VSTS? And the answer is yes, because of this diagram. Install the agent wherever you need it to be installed, and it will do whatever you wish it to do against the resources that it can reach.
Yep. Yeah, I actually had, I mean, just a specific example comes to mind. I had a customer who even, and this was more of the build example, but they had internal NuGet servers, right? Like they're pulling all these custom packages that this NuGet server was external only from inside their corporate firewall. Well, we used the service, the build service, with an agent that was on-prem. We could do the builds visible within the service because the agent was sitting there pulling down the internal URL of the NuGet server to do the builds, right? So kind of just one other example that gives you the idea, starts to hopefully get you the ideas going here of how you might use this thing.
Right, because you can use VSTS as your orchestration. There was another extreme example where we want to use VSTS as our orchestration, but we don't want any of our IP to see the internet. We don't want you doing builds in the cloud. We want the builds done on-prem. We don't want you doing the releases from the cloud. We want the releases done on-prem. Yet, we still want VSTS to be the orchestrator, and we're able to achieve that for them because, again, the agent says, what am I supposed to do? pulls down from internal the firewall, says you're supposed to go do a release, and what you need is over there on that machine that only you can see. Great, let me go grab those artifacts, and now where do you want me to put it? I want you to put it on another machine that only you can see right now, because we can't see it from the internet, and he'll go do whatever we need to for us behind the firewall. So even if you don't want any of your IP to be on the internet, you can still use VSTS to do your automated builds and your deployments.
Yeah, and keep your IP on premises if you want.
If that's
what you
feel, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. The next concept we want to talk about is related to variables. And just to, you know, there's some connection points here that we want to make. First off, just the two kind of major scopes of variables. One is global. So within a release definition, you've got the area of variables. Those variables are going to apply to all environments in that release definition. So they all have access to whatever that is. The next one is, we're just going to call them environment variables. And within each specific environment, you have the ability to specify those variables. And the only scope of where those will be known about is within that environment itself. So this is really useful for a lot of different purposes. That's kind of the two major variables to think about.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to say on the variables real quick is that if I define a variable at global scope, and then redefine that again at the environment scope variable wins. So you can have, for example, 9 of my environments use the exact same variable. Instead of having to define it 9 or 10 times, I define it once. And then in the one scenario where that password is different, I can just redefine it in that environment. And another thing is mentioning passwords is that we can encrypt these variables for you as well. They're not all just in plain text. So when we encrypt them, they're not only encrypted in the user interface, but they're also encrypted at rest. So no one will ever be able to interrogate or see those information for you.
Sorry. If you're an IT pro out there and you know AGLP with group policies, this is easy.
Exactly. <Yeah.
laughs> All right, so let's keep going here. All right, so how are all these things connected? If you take a look here, right? I mean, when you define them, you've got again, it could be the global or the environment variable, but how do you use them, right? What are the scenarios that you use them? The first one and the most simple example here is you just reference it in one of the items parameters of the task itself, right? So in this top example, we're doing an override template parameter and we're specifying the web app name variable using the $ in parentheses the variable name, in this case web app name. So that now is the way that that's going to get passed on to that task for the task on the agent to execute. It can go deeper though. So you can, it can go like another use case deeper, which is not maybe quite as obvious to some folks. And that is that, you know, you may actually pass that variable into a particular, let's say, PowerShell script or JSON file or something else that is actually looking for that particular variable for what you're trying to execute. And again, this is all happening on the agent itself. So, you know, the variable gets passed into potentially a task or just gets referenced inside. In this bottom example is a JSON script. And I know that Donovan's going to show you a little bit about that here in a bit.
So, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that being said, I'm going to switch over and let Donovan give us a demo here of the release environment and keeping it going.
Perfect. So let's pick up where David left off earlier. So if we were to go back to his definition that he created here, release me into the wild, we're going to go and edit this. This gives us a little bit more space here. We have an environment, but the environment doesn't have any task in it. He chose the empty template that gives him complete control over what it is that we want to create. We do have templates, though, so if you know you're doing a web app to Azure, you won't have to go through this that we're about to go through. It'll just set it up for you. Now, what we have here is a task library. I'm always proud when I bring this task library up because the first few things that you see in it have absolutely nothing to do with us, right? So if we were to go back to add, you see Android, Ant, Gradle, Grunt, terms you normally would not associate with Microsoft, but they're in there out of the box ready for you to be able to use. So we have an extremely powerful system here. And this list can be extended from the marketplace like we talked about earlier. So if you were to add an extension that had its own set of tasks, those tasks would actually start to show up here as well. And as you might see, there's a couple of duplicates here because I was able to add my own. If I like your task, but I think I can do a little bit of a better job, I can even add my own task to this library, so it's very powerful. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna start implementing some of those DevOps practices. And one of them that I know is near and dear to my friend David's heart here is infrastructure as code. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and say, I would like to actually use the Azure Resource Group deployment to actually stand up the target environment in which I want to deploy to. After I do that, I'm going to then want to go off and deploy a web app into that. And then finally, I'd like to go ahead and run some tests against that environment as well. One thing I'd like to point out here real quick, this says Visual Studio Test. Don't be confused by that. This will run Jasmine test, it will run Selenium test, it will run XUnit, NUnit, MBUnit, you name it. So don't be alarmed that you don't see MBUnit or Selenium. That means we can't run it. This task can actually handle all of those for you. So we're going to add that one as well. And now, as you can see, I have those three tasks in the order that I want. Should I have chosen them in the wrong order, I can simply drag and drop them. So the user interface is very flexible for you to be able to use that. Now, all we have to do now is start filling in the blanks. We've already created those service connections we talked about before. So we're going to go ahead and use the service endpoint and say I want to use this one for my connection. I want to create a new resource group in Azure or update one that already exists. So if it doesn't exist, we'll create it. And if it already exists, we're going to go verify that it looks the way that we want it to. And if everything's great, it's a no op and we're going ahead and move forward. What I get to do now is choose what I want the resource group name to be. And we'll just call this one here, Release Me into the wild.
Into the wild, I mean.
RG, so we'll just call it resource group there. We get to choose where in the world, because you know Azure has data centers all over the world, and we get to choose where in the world we'd want this data center to be created. And then we start to browse our artifacts to start to see exactly where. And as you can see, it shows me my Jenkins artifacts, and it also shows me the one from our build. And I'm going to come into our drop here. I'm going to go into my resource group project, which is a project I created earlier, that actually has that JSON template that defines the environment into which I want to deploy my app. Now, you might be wondering, well, Donovan, I've spent a little time with our build system, and I know that if I use this one here, and I put in a name of a website that doesn't exist, it'll create it for me. So why am I going through this extra step of adding this resource group?
Well, Donovan, I'm glad that you asked.
I'll just lob that one
yeah,
up there for you.
Yeah, there you go. Right? Yeah. Well, so I mean, this is a common kind of, I think I don't know about debate, but a thing that kind of goes around, right? You know, you have dev person who says, "Well, I just deploy it and it works, right? I'm good." Yeah. So you may have to have the ops guy, or maybe I need to make a couple little tweaks on the infrastructure afterwards. But it's fine. It just works. Why am I going to spend all this time to create this template and this infrastructure as code thing? I don't need to deal with that. Well,
someone has to deal with
someone,
it.
So, right? I mean, somebody is going to have to deal with this at some point, right? And so it's one of those deals where, I mean, first of all, let me back up and say that, is this just an extreme investment in my time? Well, especially for a web app, we have a lot of templates, and there's even a huge Azure Resource Manager template gallery that helps you to jumpstart a whole ton of different stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, don't be scared. It actually can be a lot faster than you think is the first thing I'd say. But there's kind of some consequences, right? If you go down the path of not using infrastructure as code as you go through environments. Well, one of the big ones is, well, what if something changes, right? Like what if, like, you know, in dev it's a little different in prod or QA, and maybe somebody hacks something different. Maybe somebody goes in and accidentally changes a setting, and then that causes outage, right? Or your tests may work in one environment and not the other due to some little tweak in some setting in that infrastructure that's there, right? So that's another one. The other one would be like, hey, like I know that this next version of the app needs another piece of infrastructure in Azure. Well, that's really easy once you have a foundation there, right? You just add a new resource, and now it gets provisioned alongside of wherever you're provisioning that to, and you can then make that seamless connection to go all the way into production by just taking that same resource template, modifying those parameters, and then pushing it all the way through your phases.
And I also think the longer your pipeline gets, the more you benefit from infrastructure as code. Let's say, for example, that we decide we want to now implement deployment slots. And I have five environments. Mm-hmm. Some poor guy has to go in Azure and five times go add deployment slots and enable them and name them all the same so that our deployment is the same. But if I were to do infrastructure as code, I would go into one template, I would then make that adjustment to our infrastructure, and I would simply deploy it again. Yeah. And then magically, all those environments will take on that new attribute or that new functionality that we want in our infrastructure. So I look at it more from a maintainability. I mean, it's a huge maintainability saver for me, not having to do something and repeat it. Not to mention having a human do it versus having a tool be able to go and spin that environment up for me.
Yeah, and just one of the side benefits too, right? I mean, is you know, it's a good point of collaboration for DevOps to work together because you both care about the infrastructure. And then, you know, in terms of, you know, quickly spinning up environments, it's like there's no more, it works on my DevBox machine under wherever it is. It's like you've got the same definition to provision from nothing, exactly everything that you need. So,
agreed.
You know, a lot of different benefits, but I'll pause. I think hopefully that's enough for you.
Get off your soapbox now.
Yeah, get off my box and we'll continue on release management.
Exactly.
But yeah, you ideally want to do both hand in hand. And it doesn't have to be, here's the other thing too. I mean, the infrastructure doesn't have to be Azure Resource Group. I mean, in our case, that's the easiest because that's what we're using. But that general premise is, hey, you define your infrastructure and code, you push your bits to that, and in tandem, however you're going to accomplish that, that's just a best practice.
Great.
Anyway, keep going.
Sure. So I've chosen my template. Our templates are actually backed by a parameters file as well, which is we're just going to basically try to rebuild the image that we had in our slide. So I'm going to quickly go and navigate my templates. I'm going to go ahead and grab my params file. This allows me to override some information. But to be exactly accurate to what we showed, I'm going to show you how we can go back in here and add a configuration variable. And we're going to add this one, just call it web app name. And we're going to call it dev web app. Just for demonstration purposes, I'm going to go ahead and copy this value here. And I happen to know inside of this template here, I have something called website name, which is where I want to use this value. To use a variable, you basically use a syntax where you start with a dollar sign, an open paren, the name of the variable, and close paren. And then VSTS will go in and say, oh, okay, that's a variable. Let me go look up its value, and then let me replace that for you when I go ahead and make this call. The website name is actually inside of my template, and it's going to be overwritten for me by this particular value here. So here I'm going to go back into my website, again, use my information. You might notice there, I will point this out, only cert is available in this dropdown. But if we go back over here, you'll notice that cert and service principal is available. It's the tool knowing exactly which type of authentication it needs for the particular task. And that's specifically why we added two. Because we know the two that we added will give us every single task that we need inside of the toolbox. A web app name. If I already have web apps there, I can go ahead and pick one that already exists. But we're just going to go ahead and actually, we're going to use a variable. I already have it. I know exactly what I want it to be called. I want it to be called this. Right? So now, what's really nice is that when we go and add additional ones, all I have to do is just change that particular variable. I like it to also be done in East US 2, which is what I chose before. And then here, again, browsing my artifacts again, we should have a zip file in my web app that is ready for me to actually go off and release. So this is the package I need to pick up. And then finally, I'd want to be able to run some tests. And this actually out of the box is completely configured to be successful for us. So now all I have to do is go back in and save this. And now I basically have my pipeline for, let's change this to dev. So this would be our dev environment that I have now completely configured for continuous deployment at this point to one environment. Is there anything else you'd like to see?
Well, I'm not sure continuous deployment is configured at this point.
Why would you say that? Ah, it's a good point because we actually haven't gone back in and triggered it. Very good point.
Oh, yeah.
So what we have to do here is basically tie it to a particular build. And these are going to be a list of the artifacts that we've actually defined, right? And then I get to choose exactly which task. So very good catch there. A little oversight on my part. But now it looks like we are ready to rock and roll.
Okay.
So I could go off and trigger a build by simply checking in some code. I think now, since I already have another build, so we're playing a little bit of little magic here. I actually have this one running too. Both of these are actually going to trigger at the exact same time. So just for fun, I'm going to go ahead and turn this one back off. But I wanted to show you how you do it because I already have one wired up already. It's like a cooking show. I already have a ham in the oven. So we're just going to go ahead and trigger this one real quick here.
While you're doing that, I think just kind of an interesting thing of how things are evolving, right? I mean, continuous integration, it's a checkbox. Continuous deployment here in this system, it's a checkbox, right?
Yeah, we're getting really close.
And so we're starting to see how the deployment pipeline and a lot of the DevOps concepts are becoming easier and easier as tooling and things like that evolve.
Yeah, I made a joke at Connect, and it's going around the internet now, of a picture of me saying my mind was blown when I was younger as a developer, thinking continuous integration was rocket science. it was something that just like, whatever, you're never going to be able to let me check in code and then compile it and test it. It was like mind-blowing. And then all of a sudden now it's like literally you just check a box. And all that stuff that used to be hard to us has become so, so easy. Mm-hmm. And continuous deployment is the same thing. Just check a box. We've figured this out for you. Mm-hmm. We made it easy. So we talked about traceability a little bit. We're going to talk about it a little bit more in the next module. But one thing I wanted to point out here is what you see is a developer's experience trying to get ready to do DevOps or do continuous deployment and release management. What's really nice is that my day-to-day life doesn't change very much. I'm inside Visual Studio, the IDE that I have grown up in. And on the right-hand side here, I have Team Explorer. And what it allows me to do is basically associate work items to this. So if I'm fixing a particular bug or adding a particular feature, I simply add it to this list of items that I'm working on. I made a change to this particular file, and then I'm going to check this in. The reason that I'm pointing this out is in the next module, we're going to show you how this actually shows up inside of our release pipelines. So you wonder, well, where in the world did those come from? They came from here. So by simply checking in some code here, and again, I think I'm using TFVC in this particular example, works just as well with Git. So choose whatever version control system that makes you happy. And then when that's actually checked in, we're going to be able to go and see that there should be a build already running, and that build will then trigger off a particular release. So we're just waiting for that to get checked in here. So while that's triggering off, anything else you'd like to add? So that was successfully checked in. I can run back over here to our build. And now you got to remember, the trigger into continuous deployment is continuous integration. So what we're going to be able to see here back from our queue is we already have that RMO demo CI running. That build is going to complete, and when that build completes, it's like handing a baton off into a relay race. It's going to hand it off to release management and say, please start moving this down our pipeline.
Yeah. So here you really see the continuous integration, because you check that in, automatically generated a build. And then you're going to, after that build's done, you're going to see literally continuous deployment in place, right? There's no time wait. It's just, it's automated. It's fully going to happen here in a second. So
right.
Now that the build's finished,
we're going to come back over to release management, go to overview here. And as you can see, we have one that's actually already running. So this one here is actually in progress. And if I go over to my logs, I can actually see that as things start to happen here, we're going to get a real-time log of exactly what the agent's doing on our behalf. It's obviously downloading the artifacts now, and as you can see, it has 40 remaining. This is another example of why you want to be very specific of what you get downloaded, so that happens very quickly. And now it's going to go ahead and deal with our infrastructure for us. It's creating or double-checking that resource group. Finally, it's going to deploy our web app and then run any tests that we have configured. And then in the next module, we'll be able to show them how all this stuff gets surfaced.
Well, yeah, we're gonna switch gears here.
Sure.
Keep you all the audience here on your toes, and I'm gonna demo kind of making an extension into your environment. So, right, so far we've kind of showed the configuration of one environment, but what if you have more? What does that look like? And so that's what I'm gonna jump in here and show you. So if we keep going here, and this time we're gonna edit my release me into the wild app definition. And the first thing that you want to do, assuming you kind of have the list of steps you probably want, there's a good chance that those steps are fairly similar with maybe another environment that you want to release to, right? So, you know, in the typical dev environment, you're going to push really frequently, do continuous deployment. At some point, you're saying, okay, we've battle tested this thing. We probably want to go to a staging or something right before production. It's up to you, but easy task here is one, clone environment. So if I click on clone environment, I now have that same exact list of tasks, and this we'll just call this stage. And you'll notice that when I click here or I click there, it looks exactly the same because that's what it did. It literally copied the tasks that were there at that time over. It's important to point out that this is not a ongoing thing. So if I change what's in dev, it's not going to get mirrored in stage.
Correct. It's just a copy
A copy was there with at whatever it was at that time.
And not only does it copy the task, you might have noticed it also copied the variables as well.
Right.
So the original variable that we defined in dev, we can now simply change its value in staging to point at a different website.
Yeah. So in this particular case, and this is one of the things with infrastructure as code, at least for Azure Resource Manager templates, your template should be the same, right, for your different environments. So the infrastructure, the Azure website, is going to be the same. But I might want to change the parameters. So really here, I could either have a different parameters file that I'd want to select, or I could possibly override additional website, additional template parameters. For instance, I know that I want to have a different storage account name or other things that are there that are defined inside the resource group template. But what I am going to do, at least in this case, is something just to change the website name variable, right? So this one, we call it dev web app. In this case, we might just, let's just say, call it the stage web app. And so literally, I'm just changing one variable here. And if your structure is so, then really you would just change your variables and off now you've got, you're off and running, right?
Yep,
for what you, you know, what your task sets are.
So building out an entire pipeline becomes very easy because the best practice is to do the same thing in every environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
The things that we normally change are scale and configuration, but the task should be the same. And we give you techniques and different ways for you to say that I need these to happen to this group of machines. And that group of machines in dev might be one, in QA might be two, and in production could be a farm of machines, but what I want to do to those machines is exactly the same. So you don't have to change this even though you're increasing the scale and or changing your configuration.
So some other options that, that we have we haven't really talked about here is looking at the approvals.
Yes.
Right? So for instance, if I wanted to assign approvers, I have the option here to have an approval before it goes to that environment. So meaning the other one completes, and then before I actually do the tasks that are in that list, I'm going to send an email. So let's just say in this case, I'm going to send it to Donovan, right?
Yep.
And so I could click him there as the person that has to approve before we go to staging. I want him to get an email, absolutely.
I'll get a rule set up for that.
Yeah. And then, right, you got the environment owner, they can have email notifications as well. We'll click OK. And now you notice down over here, you know, you have the little, you know, one next to the one approver there that's listed in that particular environment. With that being said, I want to show you kind of what this looks like in terms of the experience of what that email is. So just nothing huge here, but just so you get an idea. So here's an example of what that looks like. So it's just, you know, if you had a workflow, somebody would get that email, they'd click there on the approval request. When they click for the approval request, right, it's like a dialog box that you can select. And at that point, you just, you know, put a comment in, and then the release kind of keeps on going through that phase.
Correct. And it's really key to point out that there's two different points in time where an approval can be asked for. Before pre-deployment, which means I have not touched your machine yet. I'm just asking for permission to touch your machine. And I always use this, the scenario where I am a QA lead. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with a lot of customers who QA cycle is like 2 or 3 weeks long, which means I can't take every CI build that the devs produce because I'm in the middle of testing the current release that has to go out the door. And every build can't just go trouncing my files because it would invalidate my test results. But I also put my QA lead as the exit approval as well, because when I run a team, any bug that makes it into production, I blame my QA team for that. Any release that we don't release to production because of bugs, I blame my dev team for that. So my QA person has to have the ability to say, should this continue outside of QA? So if I've done my testing and all my functional testing failed and my exploratory testing found lots of bugs, he has the authority to say, I don't even want to inundate those downstream environments, right? I know this isn't good enough and I'm going to stop it now. So again, you have the ability to say, before you touch my environment, and then you also have to say, should this continue down the pipeline or not with the post-deployment approval as well? So there is, it's a really flexible because he put an individual there, but that could just as easily have been a group.
Right.
And then when it's a group, any individual in that group has the authority to go ahead and say, this is good or not good. And what's really nice about that is if you and I are on the same team and one of us goes on vacation, it doesn't stall all of our releases because I happen to be in Hawaii enjoying myself. Mm-hmm. You have the authority to go in and approve it. And the people are like, well, Donovan, I need one ops guy, and I need one dev guy, and one QA guy. I'm like, great, create three groups, an ops group, a dev group, and a QA mm-hmm. group. Assign all three of those groups as approvers on any combination that you like. And then one person from each team will mm-hmm. have to go in and say, we give it the thumbs up as well. And if you want to use a combination of groups and individuals, you can go nuts, and it has a lot of flexibility mm-hmm. on what is the exact approval that gets the code moving.
Right. Right. So I want to show you kind of one other concept here that Donovan started to touch on here by adding a Visual Studio test task.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to kind of continue on with the fact that there's a lot of other things that you could do here in this list. So one of them specifically that we actually had on our first module talking about what might occur in a typical pipeline is this concept of a cloud-based load testing. So in this particular example here, I'll just add both of these tests. You can see that we could add a cloud-based load test very easily by just a task. So now, you know, now for the staging environment, we know we want to do some battle testing on this thing and make sure that it actually survives this load we handle on it. And by the way, because we're using cloud-based load testing, it's really just some clicks here, and that's it, right? Yeah. We're going to use your load minutes from Visual Studio Team Services, and it's just going to run against there. And then if we had, we could also get more granular if we had a load test file that we, you know, spent a bunch of time creating very specific things that are there. There's another task for that, right? So again, this is, you know, something where if you want to do the load test, you just define it as an artifact from earlier. You now pull in that artifact to do the load test, and there you go. You've got automated load testing as kind of a separate DevOps practice that you've enabled because you have this foundation of our release management pipeline in place.
Absolutely.
So just to kind of show you that this does actually work, I'm going to go to the different releases that we have, the kind of release explorer here. And I wanted to show you kind of one that was already, you know, completed in the overall pipeline that Donovan created earlier. So here you can see, you know, we have the whole pipeline. And when we go to the actual tasks, you can see that Donovan had created one task, which was a quick web performance load test. So there you go. Just to show you that this is not a smoke and mirrors, but it actually works very, very, fairly easily, right? So here you can see the task executed. He ran for 60 minutes and run 25 load minutes against a web app, right? And then those tests finish, and that's it. It's like this that easy for getting things going and extending other DevOps practices.
Absolutely.
Okay. So with that, I think we are about ready to wrap up here. So we have kind of the resource slide that we have up again. So in case you're just watching this individual module, you can check that out. But yeah, so stay tuned. We have one more module left talking about visibility and release management. So stay tuned.